Coming up later this hour on Air Talk, the future for electric airplanes, whether they are vertical takeoff and landing aircraft, whether they are conventional retrofitted propeller planes. We'll talk about hybrids, about all electric planes, the environmental benefits, as well as the cost benefits to carriers, particularly those that do the really short hops. Like in Hawaii, from island to island. We'll talk about the future of those coming up shortly. But first, a novel case that's been filed in Alabama, the father of an unborn embryo suing a clinic in Alabama where his ex-girlfriend obtained an abortion. The father, Ryan Makers, says he begged his then-girlfriend not to get an abortion back in 2017 after she'd become pregnant. The judge in the case is now contemplating whether the wrongful death suit that Makers filed should be thrown out or whether the case would be allowed to proceed. A probate judge earlier in the year took the unusual step of opening an estate for the aborted embryo known as Baby Roe in court filings. So Maker's attorney cited the newly approved Alabama constitutional amendment, saying that there is a right of unborn children under the Alabama constitutional amendment, a personhood right, essentially. So the father is serving as the representative of the aborted embryo's estate. With us to talk about the legal issues that are raised here and whether there is much of a prospect for this civil action to proceed is Michelle Bratcher Goodwin, Chancellor's Professor of Law at UC Irvine. Professor Goodwin, thank you for being with us.
Thank you very much, Larry, for having me on your show.
So let's step back a moment, just talk about sort of the evolution of Alabama law here and this constitutional right. What does that specifically mean for the right of an embryo in Alabama?
So it's important to put the movement in Alabama in context, because it looks new coming out of the 2018 election, a referendum approved in the state that provides personhood for embryos and fetuses. But the movement underfoot in Alabama has been for some time. In part, it has been to eliminate abortion altogether in the state by any means necessary. And the measures and means of going about that have been far excessive than what we've seen in almost any other part of the country, including what one could even call abuses of prosecutorial discretion, doctors and nurses participating under pressure from prosecutors to reveal private patient information, and so forth. So to just give a very brief outline of that, prior to this referendum, in Alabama there was a chemical child endangerment statute that was passed some years ago, originally intended to discourage individuals from turning their homes into meth clinics and labs, really targeting men who were selling meth out of their homes because these environments are vulnerable for children. They blow up, children die. And rather than aggressively going after men who were turning their homes into meth clinics and labs, prosecutors were able to score victories against women, pregnant women, and utilizing the badge and shield of police officers and also the legitimacy of their office to put pressure on nurses and doctors to turn over private confidential patient information when pregnant women disclose that they use meth during their pregnancy. Now, legislators behind the law said, well, we never intended this for pregnancy and we never intended this for women. We didn't want homes to blow up and we didn't want kids to die. But prosecutors were able to leverage an embryo or a fetus being equated with a child. And later, the Alabama Supreme Court, in cases that challenged that, agreed. So the Alabama Supreme Court said, well, we see no difference between a child and a fetus. We see no difference between a viable fetus and a non-viable fetus, which then really opened the door for what it is that we see now. In the state of Alabama, there's no difference between a 5 or a 12-year-old and an embryo that might be 2 weeks old.
So then does the probate judge's decision rationally come out of that constitutional change?
Well, you know, that's a very good question, because what you see in Alabama is not all rooted in constitutional law, nor is it rooted in American jurisprudence.
I meant the state constitution there. I'm sorry.
Right. Yeah. Well, one could say that it's consistent with Roy Moore's Supreme Court, because Roy Moore, who failed in his bid for Senate, was on the Supreme Court of Alabama and supported this notion. So one could say that it's consistent with Alabama law. But here's what we must understand. State law does not trump federal law. If, in fact, state law did trump federal law, there would still be slavery in Alabama.
But a probate judge, wouldn't a probate judge be called on to decide this according to state law, and then it would be up someone to challenge the constitutionality of the state law or the state constitution?
So let's say two things there. Because in Alabama has actually, within recent years, under marriage equality and other federal mandates, has actually tried to stand down federal law, which is actually incorrect. So if there is a judge that attempts to violate federal constitutional law, that would be inappropriate. In Alabama, there's been a recent history of this. Now, for greater clarification, one could say that a probate judge in a state where there has been a referendum that says that there is constitutional legitimacy or rights that are accorded to embryos might perceive the safe route here is to just allow the case to go forward and allow the next court to take this up.
We're talking with UC Irvine, Professor Michelle Bratcher Goodwin, Professor of Law at UCI, and also with us, Professor of Law at the University of St. Thomas in Minnesota. She is Director of the school's Pro-Life Center, Teresa Collette. Professor Collette, thank you for being with us. Your thoughts about the grounds on which the prospective father is making this filing?
Well, when you look at his response to the abortion clinic's attempt to dismiss the case, he makes the point, an accurate point, that in Roe versus Wade, the majority opinion is premised upon the fact that the court is unable to determine whether a fetus, an embryo, an unborn child falls within the term person in the U.S. Constitution. And the majority opinion in that case says, well, you know, there are no other constitutional provisions that apply to fetuses. They talk about the appointment of the president or the election of the president having to be 35. They talk about a variety of provisions and say it can't therefore mean that an unborn child is contemplated within constitutional protection. So the father says in his response, the court says that they simply don't know whether the unborn are protected under the Constitution. And so the state of Alabama has answered that question. And so it's perfectly reasonable, again, according to the father in this case, to say that the state has answered the question. And so this is not contrary to Roe. Now, I take Professor Goodwin's point that we had one other situation in American history where human beings who are recognized as human beings were not afforded protection of the Constitution as constitutional persons, and that was in slavery. We can look at the Amistad case or other cases. But, in fact, we have one appellate opinion in the United States, Rounds versus Planned Parenthood, where the court determines that that which is within the woman is a human being. It's a member of the species Homo sapiens. And the only other time we've ever had human beings within the territorial protection of the United States that didn't have constitutional standing was slavery. So I understand his argument. Do I think the court's likely to take it up and be persuaded? No, but is it completely irrational and not within the ambit of legal discourse? No.
So let me just clarify, make sure I got the point. So you're saying under Roe v. Wade, there's still this space on this notion of personhood. Alabama moves to fill that, and therefore the prospective father files the lawsuit using the new Alabama state constitutional amendment on that. And then it would be up to the Supreme Court, if it wanted to relook at that, at how Alabama filled that space?
That's certainly the argument he's making.
Okay, but you don't think the court's likely to buy that?
I don't think the court is likely to take up the case in the context of this case. Now, we have other states who are looking at personhood amendments in other contexts, and it's not unique to Alabama. There are numerous situations where states have said, for purposes of probate, we're going to treat the unborn child as protected. For purposes in other contexts, medical research, et cetera, we're going to protect the unborn child. I think there are other contexts where it's more likely that the court eventually will take up the question.
Professor Goodwin, you agree with that?
I think that it's important to clarify here. Roe v. Wade, a 1973 case that went before the U.S. Supreme Court, decided 7-2, made very clear that the decision with regard to terminating a pregnancy would be left to a woman and under the advice of her physician. The case was actually about decriminalizing abortion, to be clear. And it was a case that set into place a trimester framework, a three-trimester framework, and made very clear that until viability, that these were decisions left to a woman and her physician. Embryos are not viable. It's also very important that we make clear something else, and that is centuries-old jurisprudence has made very clear that there is no child within the law, including adopted into U.S. law, until after an individual is born alive. Rex v. Izod over 100 years ago, Justice Oliver Wendell Holmes on that case, and many others. So the jurisprudence has been very clear, and I think it's important for your audience to understand that within the context of American jurisprudence, not just in relation to a woman and giving birth, but in relation to torts, to property, to contracts, other areas, that human beings are individuals that are born alive. This has been very clear within American law.
Well, can I just interrupt for a moment, because we're almost out of time? But you can criminally charge someone in many states if a fetus is killed as a result of a violent crime, for example. So there's a pre-birth right that's there, correct?
Larry, and that actually came out of movements against domestic violence, because a woman is more likely to be beaten to extremes during her pregnancy than when she's not. And so there were movements afoot in the 1980s and 90s by women's advocates who were very concerned about the abuse that women experienced during their pregnancies. And interestingly, it was a means of protecting women by shedding light on the harms that would befall the pregnancy, which I think is worth a show in and of itself, that was the route they had to take in order for legislators to think about protecting women during domestic violence.
Professor Collette, quick response to that.
Sure. Her characterization of Roe versus Wade is inaccurate, just as the history that's provided in Roe versus Wade has been proven to be inaccurate. In fact, English common law, prior to the United States being founded, made the attack on a woman with abortion of a woman quick with child a great misprision. And in fact, the reason you couldn't prosecute a man prior to the quickening, or when the child's movement was felt, was because the state of medical science at that point was you couldn't be sure she was pregnant. She could simply have a swollen abdomen for any other number of reasons. So there are a number of errors, and Roe versus Wade was originally taken up not to address the question of abortion per se, but to address whether a state criminal defendant who's being charged under a state crime can have his case removed to federal court to get a federal court hearing instead. It was a
okay.
cultural question purely that got transmuted into what we now have, this Roe versus Wade and abortion being written into the Constitution by the court.
Professors, I need to wrap. Thank you for being with us from the University of St. Thomas in Minnesota, director of the school's Pro-Life Center, Professor Teresa Collette. Also with us from UC Irvine, Chancellor's Professor of Law, Michelle Bratcher Goodwin. You can share your comments about this first-of-its-kind lawsuit in Alabama on the AirTalk page, kpcc.org. Coming up shortly, the future of air travel. Could it be all electric or hybrid? We'll find out after a live update from Hetty Lynn Hurdies.